Chapter 15. No threshold, which was good. No wards, which was even better. Greycloak hadn't entered a living area. He'd entered Undertown. Chicago is an old city, at least by American standards. It has been standing in one form or another since the French and Indian War, before the United States even existed. Being as Chicago is basically one giant swamp from a strictly geographic point of view, buildings tended to slowly settle into the earth over years and years. The old wooden streets did the same, and new streets had to be built atop them in successive layers. Wherever the ground isn't slow-motion mud, there's solid rock. Tunnels and cave systems riddled the area. The Manhattan Project had been housed briefly in such tunnels before it got relocated to the middle of nowhere. Someone in the government had shown unaccountably good judgment in considering the notion that developing a freaking nuclear weapon smack in the middle of America's second largest city qualified as a bad idea. All of that had left behind an enormous labyrinth of passages, caves, half-collapsed old buildings, and crumbling tunnels seemingly ready to come thundering down at any moment. It was dark. Human beings rarely went there, and as a result, Undertown had become a home, shelter, and hiding place to all kinds of nasty things. Things no mortal, not even a wizard, had ever seen. Some of those things, in turn, had expanded some of the tunnels and caves, establishing jealously protected territories that never saw the face of the sun, never heard the whisper of the wind. It's dark, close, cold, and intensely creepy down there. The fact that it was inhabited by things that had no love for mankind, and potential radioactivity to boot, didn't do much to boost its tourism industry. Greycloak paced swiftly through a crack in the back wall of the building and into Undertown's tunnels. He grew even more indistinct as he did. I had to stay closer to him, and it cost me an increasingly greater effort of will to do so. Little Chicago hadn't accurately modeled Undertown, partly because there were no maps to be had of the place, and because taking samples to incorporate into the model would have been an act just shy of active suicide. Mostly, though, it hadn't happened because I had never considered doing so. Through the translucent veil of earth and stone and brick, I could still see the real me standing over the city. My hand was still held out, but my fingers were trembling, and sweat beaded on my forehead. Odd that I couldn't feel the strain on my body from here. I hadn't anticipated that. It was entirely possible that I might have continued on without ever realizing what the effort was costing me. It could kill my physical body, leaving me, I don't know what. It might kill me outright. It might kill my body while stranding my mind here. It might bind my awareness into place like some kind of pathetic ghost. Get tough, Dresden. You didn't take up this career to run at the first hint of fatigue. I kept going, but all the same, I looked up to check on myself as often as I could. Greycloak was not long in reaching his goal. He found a narrow cleft in a rock wall, slipped inside it, and then pressed his hands and feet against either wall on the inside of the cleft and climbed up it with rapid precision. 8 or 9 feet up, it opened into a room with 3 walls of brick and 1 of earth, a partially collapsed basement, I assumed. There were a few creature comforts in it, an inflatable mattress and sleeping bag, a lantern, a miniature barbecue next to a heavy paper bag of charcoal, and several cardboard boxes that contained supplies. Greycloak slipped a heavy grate over the hole he'd just climbed up and weighted it down with several stones the size of cinder blocks. Then he opened a box, unwrapped a pair of those meal replacement bars that people use to punish themselves when they think they're overweight, ate them, and emptied a plastic bottle of water. Critical information there. Glad I was risking my metaphysical neck to pick up vital clues like this. I checked up over my shoulder. My face had gone white and ran with sweat. I expected Greycloak to turn in, but instead he drew the lantern down low, opened a second box, withdrew a plaque the size of a dinner plate and laid it down on the floor. It was a simple wooden base, inset with a ring of some reddish metal, probably copper. Greycloak pressed a fingernail against one of his gums, and when he withdrew it, his fingertip glistened with blood that looked far more solid and real than the person it had come from. He touched it to the circle and began a low chant I did not recognize. A faint mist swirled up within the copper circle, and through the spell I could see the raw magic forming itself into a pattern, a vortex that vanished beneath the plaque. A second later, the mist resolved itself into a figure, in miniature, a vaguely humanoid shape wearing a heavy cloak and cowl that hid any possible details of appearance. Except that I'd seen him before, or at least someone who dressed exactly like him.